What's happening? What is?
I guess the question, AD, is not what is this, but why is this?
Well, what is it, and why is Liz celebrating over there?
She's a flapper.
She is discoing the piss out of this place. Apparently, we got what the fuck is this? Oh, for God's sake, swing disco we have here. Brought to you by the Sunshine Terrence Swing Band.
Okay.
Sunshine Terrence Swing Band. What an album cover. I don't know what that is.
It's sort of like there's a girl at a bar, but there's a really creepy dude in the corner, really.
Porno 70s mustache going on.
Collars flowing.
And she's really not that attractive in the slightest, I gotta say.
No.
But they're both wanting some, you know.
Well, there's a lid for every pot.
Right? This is, Swing Disco from Pickwick Records. The mood, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Now, let me talk to you a little bit about the Sunshine Terrence Swing Band. I've just been reading the album cover and trying not to look at the photos. This was produced by the damnable Joe Renzetti. How dare you bring swing and disco together? How dare you bring anything and disco together?
Oh.
But here's the deal. While I was busy hating disco in 1979 when this came out, Mike Melvoin on piano, Wendy Melvoin's father from Prince's Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Blaine on drums.
This is Hal Blaine on drums?
Lee Sklar on bass and Larry Carlton on guitar.
No way. Seriously?
They weren't hating disco. They were cashing in, baby. Yeah,
session players.
You motherfuckers. So in the mood, disco style. You bastards. That's over now, right?
Like, it can be.
Wow. A little lightheaded. Right.
Well, let's get cracking here.
Let's crack.
Hi, everyone. This is Billy Cobham. I don't know why you put yourselves through this, but you are listening to the Shabby Road Records Show with AD Adams and Ryan McKay.
Well, hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
The Shabby Road Records Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, his Batgirl cosplay at this year's Comic-Con got him brought him up on terrorism charges. AD Adams!
Well, you know, my life has turned around since then, Ryan, and I'm feeling like tonight is going to be one of those magical nights. You know, like what I'm saying, like, tonight's the night.
Oh.
It's gonna be all right. Cause you know, Ryan McKay, I love you, girl. Ain't nobody gonna stop us now. Let's make some magic, babe. What do you say?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
I thought you might think so.
It's very horrifying.
That's
tonight is not the night.
It's not the night.
No.
No magic.
There is no night.
There's no magic. There is no magic. And there,
Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Episode 135 is off to an awkward start.
Yes, it is.
With
Woo!
Bad disco and ham-fisted hitting on me moments.
Yeah, baby.
We thank you guys very much for tuning in. And here we go again. We've got some great vinyl records to share with you tonight. But we've also got someone very special running the controls. That, of course, is Liz Morgan.
Liz Morgan!
Yay! What's up, Liz? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
She was... She was doing a flapper imitation during the intro there.
Yes.
I mean, it is the same, basically, the hustle and the Charleston.
All the same?
That's a good point. Yeah, the hustle and the Charleston, is there much different?
No.
Not really. I don't know. Just a few arm swings.
You know what? We're going to hit that disco. We're going to put the light on that disco ball, get that fucker spinning. We're going to find ourselves out that here in just a second.
Find ourselves out that.
Yeah. I'm practicing for Pennsylvania when we go there.
Oh, there you go. And Liz has brought with her Hal 5000, Skanky Sister. Mm. That's Sal 5000. What's up, girl?
I think somebody needs another lap dance.
Oh, that would be AD Adams needing that lap dance.
Right on, you little minx.
Great to have you back there, Sally. And if you want to get a personalized lap dance, stripper tassels, go to nameonanything.com, AD.
Oh, nameonanything.com. Are you kidding me? Anything. 70s style pink satin tour jacket? Yep. They'll put your name or logo on that. Ball caps and beach towels? Yep. They can put your name there, too. They'll put it on banners, backdrops, balloons, branding irons, ball gags, brass monkeys, and Benoit balls. And
oh, my.
Nameonanything.com.
I don't know what that is.
Yes, you do.
I do not know. What is a... Don't tell me. You'll save 10% when you... mention Shabby Road Record Show when you put your order together over there at nameonanything.com, a proud and somewhat embarrassed sponsor of the Shabby Road Record Show week after week. God bless them.
Standing proud, those bastards.
Standing proud.
Right?
America.
Love those guys.
Made right here in the USA. All right. It's getting close to 4th of July.
We have
to start being patriotic.
Yeah.
Are you drinking some America beer?
I'm drinking Budweiser out of cans.
Oh,
don't they call
God.
It America? It says on the, is that the 12 pack behind you? It says America.
Oh, it is America beer, isn't it? Well, yeah, it is.
You don't even look at them. You just down them.
I'm drinking beer out of the cans. Well, somebody had purchased, you know, the last couple of beer purchases. And so somebody, whoever went out and bought the beer, actually physically bought the beer, brought back a 400 pack of Budweiser in cans.
It's from Texas.
Which is kind of cool.
That's the smallest we got in Texas.
You
shut your commie mouth. Something wrong with that, princess?
You'll be back tomorrow for another 400 pack.
It fills the fridge.
Or you're a pussy.
What kind of pussy fridge is that anyway? A little college boy fridge.
Got your credit card number.
One day you'll grow a pair.
So, Bud and Kent, and I'm drinking out of my Yat Pack beer koozie as well.
I love the Yat Pack. Friends
Shout
of ours in New Orleans.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, speaking of beer, while we're on the subject, we got to talk about our mystery boxes, but let's give a shout out to a couple of people that dropped by the old website and bought us some beer tonight to sip on, to enjoy, to the cool, frosty, beechwood aged America.
I'm chugging these cans.
You can't even taste it. Eric Arvid Salton, our friend from Sweden, dropped by again.
What's up, brother?
He's a regular visitor to that
ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com
where you find that cold, frosty mug of beer and a PayPal link where the funds get shoveled right into the college boy fridge right here at Shabby Road and turned into ice cold America beer. 400 of them, goddamn. Well, he didn't get 400. He got 16 along with someone else. AD, someone else has dropped by again. A man that shall not be outdone.
Oh.
He will retain the crown.
It's got to be the G-Man.
It is G-Man.
Oh,
one more time. I don't know. Eric and G-Man are going toe-to-toe, and Sister Cindy's
Donnybrook. Yeah, this is going to turn into a steel cage match here.
I like
need
this.
Need a bigger fridge.
Yeah, free-for-all.
I think they should mud wrestle for the crown.
Oh, God, no.
It's one of your films, Mud Wrestle for the Crown.
For the crown.
Yes, so thanks to... this
like
show
Jell-O.
Is off the rails, and we just started.
We should start this whole
Jell-O
thing
wrestle.
Again, right?
Yeah, let's start the whole
let's
thing
Let's just
again.
Start again. Can you, there's a button you can hit over
no.
there that makes this thing
this
go
is,
away.
This is the fun part of the this show. So thank you guys for chipping in on the beer, and you too, dear listener, can do that if you visit the website shabbyroadrecordshow.com. AD Adams, how is your mystery box looking tonight?
You know, I didn't plan it, but somehow I ended up in New York tonight.
All three?
All three.
Guys, I finally made it to New York City!
Lady, shut the fuck up!
I will never get tired of that.
Such a great drop.
That guy is so angry. I can see the veins popping out of his neck.
That's fucking funny. But so anyway, I've got some awesome shit from awesome and fun shit from a future metal superstar from 1974.
1974.
Yeah.
1974. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've got some seriously mindless punk. I'm sort of sorry in advance, but not really. From the New York City punk scene, 1978. And after I figured out, well, I'm in New York and New York, I totally randomly picked another album out of my vast collection there. And it was a fucking band from New York. And I'm like, I'm playing it.
Nice.
So band from Brooklyn, to be exact, psychedelic metal from an unknown three-piece Godzilla 1970.
A three-piece Godzilla.
A heavy fucking, yeah.
You got the head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Yeah, man. It's just, you're going to. Yeah.
Wow. That's killer, dude.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. One of these times is a first spin. One of these three picks is a first spin on Shabby Road. Uh-oh.
I'm just padding my box, just going.
Good box.
You got no chance.
Oh,
I love New
yeah.
York. I love New York, and I don't believe I've got any New Yorkers here. I got just shabby classics.
Okay.
I, you know, to be honest with you, I feel like I've strayed a little bit last week with my, you know, guys that sing like this.
You might have.
I feel like I need to get back to my roots.
That'll do
your
what?
Roots.
My roots. The book, not the television horseshit.
Singers who sing like this are much more intelligent than that regular rock. You know that.
That's right. All right. So I was like, I got to throw down next week because, you know, I may have strayed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I want to just get back in the good graces of our shabby academy here. Yes. Yes. 1974 for me as well on Warner Brothers Records. Oh, my God. A wildly offensive second verse in this song that just rocks balls.
Of course.
Yes.
Man. All right. You may have prompted me to switch one of my decisions.
Oh, it's full on and it's riff heavy. I think all of my songs tonight are super guitar riffy stuff going. The next one takes us back a little earlier, 1970. And we're going to a kick-ass band from England, Power Trio. And we're singing about Clash of the Titans shit. So you know it's epic and it's heavy and dark. And then I've got a bunch of great stories. You know how like we love our rock and roll shenanigans.
Mishaps, if you will.
Mishaps, yes. Missteps. This man has them in spades.
Bungles and boners, if you will.
This thing is just rife with mistakes and problems. And the record itself is pretty cool. But I just can't wait to tell you guys about all the things I learned today as I went and the dude posted a lot of his diary on the internet.
The grin on your face is telling so many stories right now.
Yeah, that's going to be good. So stick around for that. And all we need to do is decide who's going first, right?
I think that's where we're at right now, huh?
Who's going to be the first one to take a record out of the old mystery box and spin a track? Liz has the playing cards, red and black. 80s red, I'm black. And she's shuffling away on our two-card Monty. AD, why don't you go ahead and pick?
Oh, how about the left hand there?
Black.
Nice.
You're on a roll there, I think, lately, aren't you?
Kick it off.
I think so.
Been a while.
Finally, it has. All right. Let me just – this is the one with the wildly offensive second verse where I'm just like, really? That is – so I'm just going to recite it for you. Okay. AD.
It's so offensive, you got to hear this.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And that's how we roll.
Just because I'm skinny, don't you sell me cheap. I'm as long as a country mile. Well, some like it wide and some like it deep.
Oh, God.
And guess which one is my style?
Jim Dandy. It's got to be Jim Dandy.
Because I got the fire. And I've got Montrose.
What? Montrose? That's a Montrose lyric? That's got to be Sammy Hagar.
Written by Ronnie Montrose.
Oh, my goodness.
Side one, track one. Or side two, track one. Excuse me. I Got the Fire from Paper Money, October 74, on Warner Brothers. That lyric really shocked me.
No kidding.
It was like my second or third play through the song because I was really digging it. I watched it on they performed on was it Rock Concert or one of those Midnight Special or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're rocking it, and I'm like, surely they're going to change the lyrics to this thing. Nope. And don't call me Shirley.
No, and you can't say get higher on the Ed Sullivan Show either, can you?
Well, they said that Sammy Hagar is going, I'm as long as a country mile, and some like it wide and some like it deep, and guess which one is my style. Whoa.
No, I'm thinking none of the above if you have to sing about it. If you have to go claiming that in a lyric, I'm betting C. Not
You're right.
A,
yeah,
not
none
B,
of the above.
C.
There's another guest star we'll never have.
Yeah.
Well, I'm all right with
so,
that.
So we're playing I'm Just About Average by Montrose from Paper Money.
Yes.
It's the second album that in their catalog, and it's the last one to feature old Sammy Hagar. And it's the first one to feature a new bassist called Alan Fitzgerald, who would go on to be the dude in Night Ranger.
No way.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the Montrose guy. He's kind of like the dorky-looking one in Night Ranger. Guy wears glasses.
I'm having a trouble picking out which one you're talking about.
Like, which one, right?
Yeah.
Continuing Montrose's never making two albums with the same lineup, the streak is alive and well on this second record. And that's one of the funny things about Montrose is that every record was a different lineup. At least one dude changes. So next album, Sammy's gone.
Sure.
You know? So Ronnie Montrose's career begins to take shape in his hometown of San Francisco with a band called Sawbuck.
Sawbuck.
And a bassist is buddy Bill Church. And Bill Church would be in Montrose and also go on to play with Sammy Hagar.
He was a Sawbuckaroo.
Yes, he was a Sawbuckaroo. Is that their fan club?
Yeah.
So they're recording their first album, and the producer suggests that they back up Van Morrison, who's in the same studio, and the producer's also working on this other record. And it's Tupelo Honey by Van Morrison. So why don't you come a couple doors down and lay some tracks for Tupelo Honey, like, for example, Wild Night, which Mellencamp covered. Remember that song?
Oh, yeah.
So that kind of puts them on the map. And Ronnie then hooks up with Edgar Winter after post the Van Morrison thing. And the reason why he hooks up with Edgar Winter is because the old drummer from Sawbuck ended up with Edgar Winter.
Yeehaw!
Yeah.
Yeah.
His name is Chuck Ruff.
You goddamn right it is.
So the album that they happen to play on is They Only Come Out at Night. So that means that it's Ronnie Montrose on Frankenstein and on Freeride.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you know that was Ronnie Montrose on Frankenstein?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Now, a lot of people think it's Derringer.
I always thought by default, I thought it was Rick Derringer on that track.
That would be a good guess. Or it could be Handsome Dick.
So it was during this period that Ronnie Montrose allegedly OD'd on amphetamines, and leading to a long stance, anti-drug stance. Like, all right, I'm not doing drugs, and anybody that plays with me, you cannot do any drugs or alcohol.
No, it wasn't like that. It was basically turn in your drugs if you're going to work with me.
Is that the way it was?
Yeah, then he kept them all.
Oh, the... Wow, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
I'm right? Very anti-drug. I want you to turn in the drugs into my suitcase, please.
Listen, if you bring the people who bring it in the most, I consider you the most honest. So you've got your job intact.
Right. Is that what Elvis did?
Mm-hmm. Of course
I was strung out on heroin.
I love that. So by 1973, Montrose leaves Edgar Winter and hooks up with his old buddy Bill Church. And a couple local Bay Area players by the name of Denny Carmassi and Sam Hagar, mm-hmm. which is what he's credited on the first album. Sam Hagar.
Sam.
Yeah, and sounds funny now, but that Van Morrison producer that hooked him up doing Tupelo Honey with Van Morrison's name is Ted Templeman.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that's the guy.
We would have another Van involved later, would we not?
We would. It's very incestuous now at this point, isn't it? So Templeman's the one that hooks Montrose up with a deal with Warner Brothers, and he's the one that puts out the first record, which is how was that first Montrose record? Rock Candy Baby.
Doesn't get much better. I mean, there's not a bad cut on that. Yep.
You know, it's weird. It didn't sell very well when it was first initially released, and it's like this long juggernaut that just keeps going.
Highly influential. Going. If you ask a lot of people about that record, I mean, when you talk Montrose – you're talking about that first record.
Oh, I blame
pretty
the
much.
Packaging.
I mean,
you
right?
like the packaging list.
I blame the packaging.
Oh, because it's not. Oh, okay. It's
nothing special.
There's
about
nothing
it.
Special about it.
They're
no.
shirtless on the back. What do you want?
Not good enough for Liz.
Here's what I want: them not shirtless on the back.
Yeah, it's not good enough for Liz. Yeah, it's very interesting because, I mean, how many cover bands have you been in that's played Rock Candy, Bad Motor Scooter?
Yeah.
Space Station Number 5.
Make It Last. My old band
God,
did that,
right?
Too.
Great tune, right? I mean, go down the fucking track listing.
It's a
powerhouse.
Weird is that?
Great hard rock albums
it
of
is
all time.
I mean, it's not as good as, but it is ubiquitous almost as a Back in Black for its time.
Exactly. That is sort of a standard, the flag bearer of this is what this style of rock needs to be like.
Yeah, 1973.
Needs to sound like, yeah.
So this is the follow-up to that. Now, where do you sit with Paper Money? You a fan or are you bailing after the first one?
No, Paper Money's good. I mean, what are you going to do after that? You talk about the sophomore slump. I mean, okay, follow that up.
Yeah, really.
Well, I mean, it charts higher, but it it's not reviewed well.
It charted higher because of how good the first record was. That's sort of an upward climb. You can always tell that. Then how did the third record do? And I think that was what Warner Brothers Presents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it
is.
With
the new singer Godzilla thing on the front and everything. And I think they still had momentum. And that was
that actually charted. I think I was reading that it charted. Maybe even higher.
It did. And I'm going to tell you back to what Liz said, back to the artwork on that. It was brilliant artwork on the cover of that, sort of like an old horror movie poster thing with Godzilla holding the girl, you know, that type of thing. So
That's very effective. And
good
also
marketing involved in that.
And partner that with the legs of the first album.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
None of the 2 second records had anything, had not that first album.
Well, look
album
at the Paper
so
Money cover. There's nothing
great.
On
know,
the paper.
Even that one.
That's one of the worst covers ever. It's a gray cover. It says Montrose Paper Money. That's it.
And there's nothing about money. And on the back, there's I don't know what that is.
A divider between the two sides track listings? It's awful. So side two, track one, I Got the Fire by Montrose. This is a hot record. I think the side two is brilliant. It kind of varies a little more in terms of style. Side one is a little bit of a downer, but side two, man, if you get this record, I mean, don't pay more than $5 for it, but side two is where you start. Like, drop the needle on side two
first.
There
you go. Good advice. Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And you'll hear this song first.
I'm in.
Dude, come on, that rocks.
Pound cake or something.
That's short.
That's fuck
it was, Liz. Just because he's skinny, don't sell him cheap.
Don't sell him long.
I just said it was short.
Notice I went immediately to Jim Dandy's pants when you said that. Like, long has Jim Dandy. Well, of course.
That was I'm Painfully Average by Montrose from Paper Money, October 1974 on Warner Brothers Records. I love Denny Carmassi drumming on that. And I love Ronnie.
He's a great, great drummer.
And Ronnie Montrose is his guitar solo in that is shredding balls on the
circuit. Carmassi ended up with Heart.
That's right.
For a number of years after Michael DeRozier was sacked.
That's
and or quit, whichever the case may be.
Yeah.
He was strung out.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Strung out on heroin.
That's right.
All right, AD, what you got, man?
All right, we're going to go to New York. Talking about a band. This is their second full-length released by a band of wee little men from Cortland, New York. I think you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Did you say Portland, New York?
Cortland, New York. We're talking about the Electric Elves, the Elves, and then finally...
Elf. Look at that cool Elf record. I don't know which one's that.
Well, I don't have that one. That's why I blinked once, then again, my friend. It's called LA 59 by Elf. Now, it's the original, the title is Carolina County Ball, which is their second record.
Uh-huh.
Right? First one's Elf. Second one, Carolina County Ball. Came out on Purple Records and MGM in the U.S. and Japan. In the U.S. and Japan on the MGM release, which I have, it was renamed LA 59.
Why?
Well, I got some theories behind that. Let me skip forward to my notes so that – because I'm confused all the time. I think what happened was – at the same time, remember, these guys were sort of being groomed, recruited, observed, scouted, if you will, by the Purples, right?
Mm.
By Ritchie Blackmore.
That's right.
Exactly.
I loved their wigs.
So, and Roger Glover produced this album. So that was right when these guys were starting. People were going, who the fuck are these guys, right? So
it's got to be when Ritchie Blackmore goes, I need to mine the Long Island area.
Well, yeah. And what happened was also, and don't forget now that at the time when this was happening, so was Roger Glover's. Remember the Butterfly Ball record?
Oh, yeah. I love that record.
So I'm wondering out loud, there's nothing I read that prompted me to think this, but just my brain goes, maybe Carolina County Ball. And the title of Glover's solo record,
Butterfly Ball,
might have been a little confusing to people. Now, Dio sings a couple of tracks on that record.
Interesting.
I don't know. That's just I'm throwing out there to the universe to ponder because I have no answer. But it just I'm like you. Why would the fuck they do that?
And LA 59, what does that even mean?
Well, there's a song. Well, it's funny. Track one, side one is called Carolina County Ball, which was the initial name of the album.
Title track, usually.
Side one, track two is called L.A. 59, and he's singing about how cool it was in L.A. in 59.
Well, he wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, well, any more than Sammy Hagar would know anyway.
Yeah.
About Trails of Snakes. So, but what a great record.
I don't know this record as well as I know the first album.
Now, you have the first record, mm-hmm. and on that record, who's playing bass?
Oh, shit.
No. Ronnie James Dio.
I guess you're right. Yeah.
He was a singer and a bass player. But remember, Ronnie split the vocals because back the Three Dog Night, well, they were kind of a two Cortland Day, Cortland, New York reference,
mm-hmm.
That Mickey Lee Soul was a keyboard player and vocalist.
Yeah.
So some of the songs Ronnie sang, some of the songs, you know, Mickey Lee, whatever. But so they – or they would do the Three Dog Night thing where a dude would sing, you know, the first part of the verse and then other dude would sing the other part and they'd harmonize or switch. You know, there was a lot of that. And there's a lot of that on this record also, which is phenomenal because this Mickey Lee Soul guy is a good singer.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great band. So on this record, that which is their second, came out in 1974.
Again?
Yeah.
That's two for two.
Craig Gruber first came into the picture. And, of course, Craig Gruber ended up on the first incarnation of
Rainbow.
Yes. Rainbow. Well, as a matter of fact, that's where Ritchie Blackmore got his man. I mean, it's Ronnie Dio, vocalist for Rainbow Record.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Driscoll,
mm-hmm.
on drums, first drummer on the Steve Edwards. Now here's where Steve Edwards gets the sack.
From Richie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the guitar player. We won't be needing you.
Steven, we must talk.
And poor Steve Edwards, because you got all your buddies, and Mickey Lee Soul ended up playing keyboards on it, too.
So your whole band's there.
Except for you. Everybody gets hired, but you have to go.
Do we know what he did to get ousted? Other than, does he play guitar?
Well, no, he's a guitar player. He's a guitar player, yeah. That's like me playing me starting my solo band, and I won't be needing a drummer.
Steven, I don't need a second banana.
He just basically takes Steve Edwards, poor Steve Edwards' band from him.
Oh.
I did some research on Steve Edwards.
Oh, no. Did it end badly?
No, I found nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, no news
so
is good news.
Sadly, it didn't end badly, because we'd have some great stories here. Steve, dude, come on. Dude.
He'll come on the show. Come on.
Yeah. Either we'll bring you on or we're expecting a dinky diamond from you soon, bud.
Wow.
So, no. You go to jail for that now, can't you?
Yes.
Okay, not. All right, not that, Steve Edwards. You know, be so fucking sensitive.
That's okay. Nobody loves
I don't even know
Steve.
The guy. But so, yeah, I think you played, God, when's the last time Elf was like, that was.
A couple years ago.
Once, right?
One time.
What the fuck? Oh, episode 70.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to rifle through my
notes here.
I believe
it was the last track on side two.
You played Gambler Gambler.
Gambler Gambler, yep. Yeah.
On the Wawas and Bubble Machines episode 70.
Classic.
Yeah. So check that out. But that was from the first album. But yeah, Dio played bass on that. Pretty cool.
That's right.
Cool,
yeah, now that you mentioned it, I forgot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And also, in an unplanned moment of serendipity, what's the date today? Well, it's June 1st when we're actually recording this episode. Mm-hmm. Happens to be our dear brother Germ's birthday.
Germ? Oh, yeah. Our buddy Germ. Okay.
Germ, it's his birthday, right?
So.
And of course, his beautiful wife, and he had a baby, a couple years ago, year and a half ago. Oh, and what did they name that daughter?
Ronnie James.
Ronnie James Germani.
Yeah.
They named their girl Ronnie James. So
That's awesome.
Weird. I decided to play this. And a phone call came about check your calendar, blah, blah, blah. I turned around. I go, it's June 1st. And I had this album cover in my hand. I go, and it's Germ's birthday. And I went, Ronnie James.
Oh.
And I have to mention it on the show. So happy birthday, Germ.
That's awesome.
And sending love to you and Stacy and little Ronnie James.
So
what a doll, right?
So
hey, and we're going to see him in Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks.
We are.
Yeah.
By the time this is already out, we've already seen Germ. How was he?
Oh, he's great. Dude, he's fantastic. And he's got a shit ton of family and they're staying at the same hotel. They got a bunch of rooms in our hotel.
Oh, this is our last episode then.
Ever. Yeah, yeah. We won't see you after Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's a big good night. It's a big sayonara. So anyway, yeah, I think that's kind of cool though, man. So, you know, this is a great band. I mean, this band went on to great things, you know, ultimately. Right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, they became Rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
For a minute, and then systematically all of them were fired.
Right. Oh, yes.
Every single one of them.
Right, exactly. So, you know, but life, although they leapt into stardom, most of them, was not always kind to our Electric Elves.
Mm-hmm.
For in the early days, 1968 to be exact, the band was in an automobile accident which killed founding member and guitar player Nick Pantis.
That's right.
Right?
I remember hearing about that.
Also, sadly, the aforementioned Craig Gruber died an untimely death in 2015 at age 63 from prostate cancer. Now, I know his brother Keith Gruber.
Do you?
Yeah, very well. He's a great guitar player from living in Buffalo.
Wow.
Area, Cortland area, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. I've played with him before. So
wow.
Yeah. And it was a sad day when Craig died a couple years ago. Also, aforementioned drummer Gary Driscoll died. And the reason Gary Driscoll didn't last past the first Rainbow album is he was kind of an R&B based drummer, and Richie didn't like his R&B style fills. He just didn't like his playing.
And also Cozy Powell became available.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Gary Driscoll at age 41 in 1987 was found brutally murdered.
No.
In a friend's house in Ithaca, New York, which remains an unsolved murder to this day. They say it was definitely drug related. And who can blame a motherfucker? Right. I'd be a drug riddled wreck if all your friends are superstars and you're going, I'm an R&B drummer living in Ithaca. You know, I mean, that would be depressing.
There's worse fates.
So the guy, no, there's not. So the guy who was initially arrested was acquitted. So they thought they had the guy, and they didn't. It was like a whole, it's a small town in, you know, upstate or kind of mid New York state. And of course, Ronnie James Dio passed away in 2010 at age 67 from stomach cancer. So, whew, you know, Richie Blackmore, stop killing your friends, dude. No, what kidding. The fuck with you, murderer?
Don't play with
God almighty. Don't play with Richie Blackmore.
He's cursed. Gonna,
Jesus Christ,
Cozy
man.
Powell, right? DNR does not remain.
So oddly enough, and again, unplanned, is the fact that the first song I played on the last episode, if you recall, was Budgies and Again.
You're
and
right.
Again and Again. Well, I'm playing a track called Annie New Orleans from this one.
All right.
And it is, dude, it's really, really cool. It's just, it's a simple kind of rock and roll boogie-woogie number where Ronnie James Dio, what's the line he rhymes? Annie with Fanny. Chris Gow, what you gonna do?
Oh, you can't do that. Chris Gow will not hear of it.
Yeah, well, he ended up being Ronnie James Dio, so fuck you, Bobby Chris Gow.
There you
right?
go.
That's how you end a fucking song.
Wow. Wow.
Right?
Well, I love those. Elf records are great.
They are. They're fun,
I
man.
I enjoy those.
It's really cool. And Dio's becoming Dio. That he's getting that throat. He's getting that growl.
A little more than the last album.
Yeah, ready to step into that whole Dio thing, man. He's becoming him. Matter of fact, it's funny you say that because on the first record, he's credited as Ronald Patavona. right. which is his given name.
On bass and vocals.
Yeah, on bass and vocals. So that was Annie New Orleans from Elf's second record, originally titled Carolina County Ball. Those on the Purple record label, LA 59 if you get it from the MGM label.
All right.
So great, great record. The tracks are great.
It's on my list.
It should be, as it should be.
Cool.
What you all got, right. brother?
In a serendipitous moment, I have something that's Deep Purple related as well.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
That's right. Very Clash of the Titans, this album. I'm doing the title track off of this album, Medusa. By Trapeze.
I'll betcha. Oh, let me hold that.
There they are. Trapeze, baby.
I don't have this, man.
It's great. 1970. On Threshold Records, November of 1970. This is the band Trapeze, their second album called Medusa. And these guys were great. I love these guys. And they're a little funkier than what you think. I mean, by this point, they're a power trio. But there's more kind of funkiness going on. No wonder Ritchie Blackmore did not like Glenn Hughes.
Right.
Because they were kind of more into that R&B thing.
Sure.
Actually, if they would have hooked up with Elf, it might have been a better combination. But
well, there's a lot of soul in Glenn Hughes that Blackmore lacked. He was more of a rock metal guy.
He hated it. Blackmore rejected it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's do a little backtrack here on the band Trapeze. We've played them on the show a couple times before, but it's been a long time. And there's certainly something that needs to be brought up about this band. AD just pointed to a certain member of the group. So let's go back. There was a group called the Montanas who had a few minor hits in the late 60s in England over there. And the keyboard player and the singer left that band and struck out on their own. And they found a local power trio that they wanted to hook up with. They're like, well, we've got some hits. We've had some charts. And, well, we want to do our own thing. And so they find a band called Finders Keepers. Ironically enough,
they found a band called Finders yes. Keepers. Well, I guess they kept them.
And in that band was a man named Glenn Hughes, who played the bass and sang. Mel Galley, who played the guitar and sang as well.
Yes.
And a man called Captain Fiddleabout, who played the drums.
Wicked Uncle Ernie? Are you
Wicked Uncle
on
Ernie
drums,
on
yes.
drums?
Bad touch.
Should we even
Bad Touch Holland?
Bet yes, that would be David Holland, who would go on to play with Judas Priest
and Little Boys.
And wow, oh my God! So we discussed that at length last time, but particularly nefarious because the boy in question was
right
challenged,
so
mentally challenged.
Save
and
your
also
fucking letters,
crippled.
Save your letters, and save your complaints.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, if those accusations are wild.
Pretty and we're,
bad.
And we're
damning.
And
you know?
We're rather immature, so don't, you know, don't
yeah.
judge. Don't
so
judge.
Going back to the Montanas, their keyboard player, the guy that left to start this new band, he suggests the name Trapeze. Like, all right, 5-piece band. So here we go. And they end up being the first band signed to the Moody Blues vanity label, Threshold Records, which mm-hmm. is what you have here. And the bassist for the Moodies, John Lodge, produces this album. And I've never heard that first album. It's really hard to find. I imagine I could jump on YouTube, but to me, what everybody knows Trapeze, what they're about is the trio that's here.
That's their thing.
They
yeah.
did two records. So so after the first album, it's the singer and guitar player from the Montanas went, let's go back to the Montanas. That didn't really go as well as we'd hoped. Let's get out of here.
I think cowboy hats and Winston cigarettes, though, when you say the Montanas.
Right, but if you're from these are all Birmingham type, which is sort of Midland. I think it's Midland? I'm going to screw up. See, this is where the British listeners are like, Ryan, you're fucking clueless.
That's like somebody going,
Ryan,
New Jersey,
American.
That's out by like
Utah,
Portland,
right?
Oregon, right? Yeah, and just, I know, we're so fucking...
There was something you did on last week's episode that struck me funny in the set, how directionally challenged we are. You, just in passing, you were talking about Wales, the Welsh, and you brought a band from Wales. I forget who it was. I'm drawing a blank. But you're like, they're from Cardiff. Oh, it was Budgie. They're from Cardiff. Yeah, Cardiff. Yeah. And it's the southernmost tip, and it's a port town, and the southernmost. I'm like, how can you rattle that off? And then when we say Canada, you're like, it's up southwest of Hawaii.
Some things I write down.
So great.
The things I just write down. Some things I, you know, why I care about some facts and not others, it rattles my cage as well. Right. I have no idea. I'm clueless.
It's the land down under, right?
Right.
Oh, honey, like, oh, like you wouldn't believe.
Cardiff is the southernmost tip of Wales. Anyway, so... So
try
band,
not to touch the southernmost tip of anything.
So the trio presses on, right? And it's kind of weird that the keyboard player from that Montana's band goes, let's call the band Trapeze. And then the dudes in Finders Keepers are like, we're Trapeze now, the three of us. It's kind of interesting, you know? And the guy John Lodge stays on and produces this album, which is the first in that run of now we're a trio. And there's only two of them because, as you know, speaking of Richie Blackmore, he's going to start plucking dudes from bands. So,
right?
So Glenn Hughes gets plucked to be in Deep Purple come 73 for the album Burn, a great record.
All right. Burn or Machine Head, Ryan?
Burn. You thought I would disagree, but it's
– No. I've always loved Burn. I would go there too, and I think only because Machine Head, it was more groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it's a little more worn out, so I will always go Burn, and just for the title track alone.
Right, that never gets old to me.
And Pace, you monster!
Right,
right.
There's things on Machine Head that people forget about, Never Before. Somebody. There's great stuff on that record. But the problem with that record is Smoke on the Water's on it and Highway Stars
right,
on it.
Right, right.
As great as they are and as
Freebird and Radar Lover on that
influential
album.
Influential as they are. It's like,
way
okay.
To Heaven's on that record.
Yeah, so what do you pull out? You pull out Burn.
Yeah, you have to.
Do you pull out Stormbringer at all? Are you?
That's a good. You know what? That record's better than people used to think it was.
Yeah,
like me.
Right.
People like me.
Yes,
you say that right.
So, but the thing about Trapeze that people forget. First of all, they forget that these two records are great. It's Medusa and the next one, which is. I should have wrote it down. I'm blanking on it. It's a really funky record. That next one,
Cardiff.
Yes, southernmost tip of Wales, I believe is the name of it. And then so Glenn Hughes leaves and Mel Galley gets another dude in the band to play second guitar and keyboards. And Mel Galley is the lead singer and does a great job. Mel Galley's got a good voice.
You know what? He does have a good voice.
They did a couple records there, and those records are worth checking out. So really, Trapeze never made a bad record, you know, that you can find floating around in the bins.
I would agree with you.
Right?
With that. Yeah, absolutely.
Mel Galley, unfortunately, we lost a few years ago, and there's just not a lot of stuff on Trapeze to find, like, some really good, interesting dirt. I mean, I guess I could read Glenn Hughes' book, but I haven't read it. Mel Galley passed away, and Dave Holland's in jail. So
those are pretty good stories for like, what we do.
But Mel Galley did pass away from cancer, and at some point it was more of a hospice situation for him.
Yeah,
and he was still posting before his death. And one of his last posts is really great, and it's worth reading. I love this post because Mel Galley, I mean, his career post-Trapeze, he became a guitar player in Whitesnake, played on Slide It In, joined him. Saints and Sinners, I think, is when he joined him and stayed through to Slide It In. So a beloved figure in that scene.
And an unsung name, really. It's not a household name.
I never knew he sang until I heard those later Trapeze records. And you're like, holy shit,
it's one
this
of those
guy.
Guys you end up going, you know what? Fuck, how did – you know, I wish I'd have dug him sooner for him, not just some
after.
Band he was in and not even knowing he was in it, if that makes any sense at all.
Right. So this is his post not long before he passed away from cancer. I want you to know that I am no longer going out to the pub. Now the pub is coming to me. I have friends visit me at home every day. I have drugs in me 24/7.
Fantastic.
And I have a plentiful supply of gin and tonic by my bedside.
Yay.
I even have my own ice machine. In fact, it's just like my Whitesnake days. Rest in peace, Mel Galley. Oh, that's a great
what
post.
What a trooper.
Good for him, oh, man. I love trapeze. And so we're going to hear the title track, Medusa.
Good for... Whoa!
Yeah, this is heavy. This has got a great heavy riff. It's going to start a little ballady.
Start your album. Boom, right here in my hand, I think.
Probably,
yeah. Best album.
So we're going to hear Medusa. It starts a little ballady, and then it gets... This riff is so great. And Glenn Hughes takes on Jesus Christ Superstar at the end, because Medusa's there, right? And it's like, I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah, man. Snake hair. What you going to
do? Snake hair, man. So check it out. The heaviness of trapeze. November 1970, Threshold Records. This is the title track, Medusa.
You're bound to think that I'm on the shore from a sea that never came. Now's the time to find the time. I've done what has to be done. Voices call the nameless one, crying all of the time. Tales of no one in my sleep, stepping out into the night. A sea that almost came. There's no time to find the time.
I've done what has to be done. I've done what has to be done. I have done.
Yeah, that's the towering Les Paul of Mel Galley and the high-pitched Jesus Christ Superstar shrieks of Glenn Hughes.
Fucking Glenn Hughes is throwing fucking down on that. I mean, think about the time when that came out. That's
1970.
There weren't a lot of dudes singing that great, man.
No.
That's powerful stuff.
Yeah,
that's,
it was.
Right. I mean, that's such a great record.
And he's getting sacked left and right. You know why? Because he's better than the dude who hired him.
He had a nice little arc there. He got he went into Deep Purple, and then he stayed in Deep Purple.
Yeah, yeah, for a while.
Then he kind of bounced around. He just never really did, I mean, here in the States. I mean, once he was out of Purple, he jumped in on a Black Sabbath record for some reason.
Sure.
And that was about it.
Looking for work at, yeah.
Huge in Europe.
Right?
He never
Superstar.
Superstar, yeah. Still going. He's California breed now.
Great riff, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great
riff, that,
dude.
We were just talking about how the riff is not doomy, minor-y. Like it's heavy, but it doesn't have that sort of usual kind of pentatonic or flat five kind of minor-y.
Well,
it's a really interesting riff with like a major six in it and just still just as heavy as anything.
Well, there's an extra energy created too because it's in six, not, you know, like four and four. It's bar of four and a bar of two if you want to count it in, you know, four and two or a bar of six. Mm-hmm. So it's got that anticipation where you expect it to be a longer riff and all of a sudden you're at the beginning of the riff again.
Yeah.
So there's an energy that's created by that. So all that said, that made the riff fantastic. And of course, we're both perking up and going, that so's Al Clemenson.
Very Alex Harvey.
But Alex Harvey was very them.
Yeah, yeah,
so
exactly.
It's kind of cool.
They predated it. Okay, The Great Trapeze. That's the album Medusa title track. Oh, my gosh. What you got, AD?
Oh, my God, Ryan. I brought in once, I think I brought Surf Punks.
Yeah.
Sadly, on a happy hour.
All right, this is.
And then once on a regular
this
episode.
This isn't as bad as them, but it's sort of in the same league. Sophomoric lyrics, Ryan? Check.
Got it.
Melodies and vocal phrasing that could have just as easily been written by a seventh grade zit-faced misfit? Check.
Oh, boy.
A fun little record regardless? Fuck yeah.
All right.
I found this, and this is one of these bands that when they came out, I was still, you know, I still every once in a while would look at the Hit Parade or the, you know, Circus magazine on the magazine stand, man. And this band, it's the name was familiar, and I saw it sitting there. I walked into Zia, and it was sitting at the very front of its section. And I was drawn immediately to it. I went, my goodness. You know,
Dead Kennedys?
No, just curiously, no, older than that, 1978, Sire Records.
Huh.
New York band.
Hmm.
But it was one of those bands that I never heard before, heard of a lot because they were in the press. They were in the early New York Bowery, you know, Max's Kansas City. They were one of the first bands that actually brought a steady flow of new customers into Hilly Crystal's failing CBGB.
Oh, okay.
In the East Village. So, I mean, remember CBGB? When people see all these all the people who have no idea what CBGB means,
mm-hmm. The country.
Hey, I'm Cook. It's cool, man, because I got a CBGB shirt. It's actually country, bluegrass, and blues, mm-hmm. otherwise known as CBGB.
Right. Yep.
So, and also the umfug under that is other music for uplifting gormandizers.
What is a gormandizer?
A gormandizer is one who has voracious appetite, voracious eaters, quote, of music.
Oh, okay.
But that's not part of it. Music has nothing to do with gormandizer, but that was sort of the play on, okay.
Oh, okay.
And so they added that. Umfug.
So it's not original music from the underground, which is one of the falsities that I've heard.
That is false. It was, other music for uplifting gormandizers.
There you go.
And that's one of those weird things that when Hilly, and it was the East Village. So what was happening in the East Village in the early 70s was what? Bob Dylan went electric. Mm-hmm. There was a whole folk scene. You know, I think the Mamas and the Papas had made it and probably were on their way down, but playing all the different New York village clubs, the folk singer clubs that were still hip,
Right.
Hangers on to that. So, but Hilly Crystal wasn't making a dime because that music was going out. So a couple dudes approached him and said, hey, you know what? We got this band that – is trying to, make it here. And it was all about, a new scene. So in the scene at the time, there was, the Mercer Arts Center had collapsed. And so, kids were looking for a new place to go. That's kind of where the art rock punk scene thing was going. The people were still digging the Velvet Underground, the Dolls, in those early days. This was probably 73. The Dolls were coming up and, mm-hmm. So that whole New York scene, Lou Reed, Patti Smith was coming of it. So, but they were anything but folk, Ching a chang, peace and love, acoustic medallions and shit.
Yeah.
So they needed a place to go. Well, just so happened that Ching a chang, peace and love establishment was going belly up. So a couple dudes went, all right, well, we got these acts that used to play at Mercer. Some of us are going to go play it at Max's, and Hilly went, fuck it,
What have I got to lose?
Right. So this was at 73, 74. So these guys were one of the first bands that really brought a lot of people in. Like on a steady basis. So they were kind of regulars at the club. They never did shit. They did this record. And somehow they were really good at the press. But they were there in the early days. I think this tells its own story. That their record didn't come out till 1978. So, by then that whole scene had died. Not CBGB's, but the whole scene and the whole
early period of CBGB's.
And they were kind of the ones who helped pry the door opens for that kind of thing, So it's one of those things. So we got John Morelli, John DeSalvo, Bobby Butani, Jeff Salen, and Tommy Frenzy, known as The Voice, collectively known as Tough Darts, Ryan.
Tough Darts, I don't know from these guys.
Well, I don't either.
I love the name. That used to be the tough shit back in the day. Well, Tough Darts, dude. Oh, I dropped my ice cream cone. Well, Tough Darts, dude.
Is that really a slang?
That used to be back in the day.
Really?
Yeah, Tough Darts.
Well, I've never even heard that as a slang. Have you?
You never heard that?
I'm not that old.
Wow.
Kind of, you almost are. Like a decade
never
or so.
Tell
whatever the fuck.
Age.
I didn't.
Sally, come on.
But
don't let that happen.
This is really cool. So I think this is one of the first bands to have an actual quote unquote grill. Dig this album cover. I think you like it.
All right.
So I bought it.
Wow, the guy's teeth are an abomination.
Right? So I bought this.
Sort of like a corpse.
Right? Yeah, dead guy corpse. Well, look at the back now. Check this out. Look what was happening to his neck.
He has got a gun to it.
But his buddy does.
Yeah.
Or his
bass and
player.
His smoke is coming out of his mouth as if he's been shot.
Right? So, yeah, Tough Darts for you. And the album, it's their one and only album. Maybe this is good, maybe this is bad. Here's the deal with this, Ryan. This album is really... It's sophomoric. It's not what you would call a great album. It's probably not what most people would call a good album. Yet, I am so drawn to it.
Yet.
Okay, now.
Okay.
Last, what episode was it? Last week you played that Pat Travers tune?
Yeah, on the Dollar Record Bonanza, right? 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, right? Yeah. And what song was that, Ryan?
Boom, boom, out go the lights.
Okay, so there's a song on there called She's Dead.
Yes, sir. It's track four.
The words are pretty much he takes this girl on a date and he pretty much strangles her with his necktie. There's another song on there where it's called Phone Booth Man, where ring, ring, hi, I'm outside. I like what you're wearing. I'm watching you from a phone booth outside. Kind of. That's another song on this record.
Creepy.
Pretty creepy. I'm going to play, however, something a lot more positive. I'm going to play Your Love is Like a Nuclear Waste, which is awesome. Now, let's just talk about these guys. So why am I compelled? It's one of those records where if I was in eighth grade, I would love it. And back in the day, of course, I was a little older than eighth grade, but when they came out, it was, 73, 74?
Early.
So I was a kid then, and they were kind of untalented. Sire Records was new. People were kind of pushing the envelope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was this thing. They were part of the scene. And I think – I don't know why, but I think this record coming out in 78, when they were more relevant earlier, I guess if that's the word you want to use for the time, I think this was a thank you, sort of a when they give you a degree at a college – but you really didn't go to that school. What do you call it? Honorary. I think this was kind of an honorary degree, right? Sort of like, okay, right?
Well, there's some names. There's something that strikes me on here, and I don't know if you're going to get to it.
Well, the producers, right?
Well, certainly the producer, Tony Bongiovi, who came up before.
And Bob Clearmountain's on.
And, geez, Bob Clearmountain as well. Down at the bottom it says, God bless Seymour, Kenny, and Ian Hunter.
Right.
Did you see that? Is that Ian Hunter, Mott the Hoople?
Yeah, absolutely. And Seymour, of course, is the head of Sire Records.
And recorded at the Power Station, mixed there as well.
Right, so there's money back there, but this record's terrible, and they knew it. But they knew, and I say that with love. I say that one, and like, this is a stupid, fun record. Listen, the Surf Punk's record is terrible, but I'll pull that fucker out on any given Tuesday.
For a party.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, Big Top.
Right?
Come on.
Yeah, right? Somebody ripped my stick. Anyway, so we were talking about what? It was
Sorry about playing side two, track two, right?
Or
one, track two, right?
Oh, yeah. So,
you're like nuclear waste.
Right. You can read some of the lyrics on it. Read the chorus in that.
Oh, you're asking me to read this tiny print?
Here, you want me to read it?
No, I'll get it. Hang on.
It's not, name me a good, it's not Keats.
It's not
Shelley.
It's not Keats or Shelley.
Okay. I'd rather crawl through poison ivy or grab high-tension wires, cut my legs off at the knees, or set myself on fire than have to feel your charms closing in around me or feel your slimy kisses covering my body. And the chorus goes, your love is like nuclear waste. Your body is danger to the human race. You should slap contaminated right across your face. Your love is like nuclear waste.
Come on, right?
I'd rather stick my tongue into a fan, drink X-Lax all day long, than have to chew razor blades or give head to King Kong, than to have to be between the sheets with you for any time, or to have to feel your scaly body moving onto mine. Oh, well, that's...
So anyway, I mean, besides the fact that they were, like, totally critical in the early days of the formation of that whole Bowery East Side punk rock, you know, new scene that was going down, their story doesn't go much further. I mean, that was the end of it, except for, again, for this sort of...
Honorary
trophy
degree.
Album, okay? You know what? Somebody let them... Somebody put out a fucking record, you know?
These guys are...
Yeah.
I'd rather crawl through poison ivy, or grab high tension wires, cut my legs off at the knees, or set myself on fire, than have to feel
Okay. That was Your Love is Like Nuclear Waste, Tough Darts, from the one and only album they put out called Tough Darts. Listen, this record stands alone. You don't have to worry about, like, quote, filling in your Tough Darts collection, right? And you can find this fucker cheap, too. Buy it, dude. I'm totally glad I bought this record. It's stupid and it's damn fun.
It's everything you said it was going to be.
I'm telling you, and I don't know why I like it, but I like it.
Its problem is that it's mixed too well. For punk rock.
Ah, because remember, they did it in 78.
Yeah, that's why.
Right.
Should have been recorded in 73, 74, like you said. Totally get it.
Yeah.
Well, something that was totally recorded in its time and sounds just like it. I've got a very interesting side project from a band from 1972 on Island Records. I've got... In the annals of worst band names ever,
he said annals.
This one takes the cake. This band is called Kossoff, Kirk, Tetsu, and Rabbit.
That's what you call your band, for fuck's sake, right?
KKTR? No. What? No, it's Kossoff, Kirk, Tetsu, Rabbit.
Fit that on the fucking marquee.
I'm thinking they're not American.
So Eddie Rabbit's in this band?
I'm thinking they're not American. You sound like a Texan over there, Liz.
So Eddie Rabbit is in this band?
No. We'll get to Rabbit. It's
I love the rain and that's I love the rain and that.
So, you know, you recognize the first name, Kossoff.
Well, Paul Kossoff. Yeah, he's playing Free.
Paul Kossoff.
Box office.
So,
box office.
Yeah. Okay, so Free, right? Paul Kossoff,
well,
guitar.
There's four of them.
Okay, well, Simon Kirk.
There's one.
With Simon Kirk, Paul Kossoff.
Box office.
Ben Box Office. So Free, that's their parent band. And
well, that's only two so far.
Well, we'll get to the other two knuckleheads here in a minute. So Free breaks up at the end of 1971 following the Free Live album and the single from it. My brother Jake. That was touted when it was released, like, we're breaking up because Paul Rogers and Andy Frazier weren't getting along. And they were just like, screw this. Add to that that Paul Kossoff, the guitar player, is falling apart from a Quaalude addiction.
He was not well.
He might have hung on.
He was strung out on heroin.
He might have hung out the longest when he was completely dilapidated. Like, they really, you'll see.
He was putting out records when he was a fucking mess.
You're holding one.
Oh, look at that photo. Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dude.
That was probably taken 2 years before the album.
2 years after he died.
Here goes my fucking career right down the drain.
actual.
That's Paul Kossoff.
Audio.
That was actual box office.
Yeah, box office. I'm gonna... So, upon the breakup in 1971... Drummer Simon Kirk and a somewhat lucid Paul Kossoff, box office, hooks up with a couple of Island Records sessioned musicians. And I'm talking about John Bundrick, whose nickname is Rabbit.
Ah.
And you can't tell from that picture, but he gets his nickname Rabbit because of his two buck teeth. And if you've seen him dead on, you're like, Liz
is losing it over there.
Dude, if you saw him.
She didn't even see his picture. She's like, but it's a profile shot and it looks like Buffin, kind of.
Yeah, he's cool there.
Right, is there another picture?
No, not on the record. Yeah.
Google that.
Wisely,
how he got
no.
His nickname.
He's a rabbit. Yeah, he looks like a bunny. He looks like Bugs Bunny.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought there was another reason.
No.
So it's pronounced Wabbit.
Yeah. So that's the keyboard player. And on bass, we have Tetsu Yamauchi.
Oh, yes, sir.
And he was a session player at Island as well. And so they just plucked those guys and let's do a record. There may have been a contract with Island that we need to
fulfill. We need no contract. We have our honor.
Yeah, I understand that you need a contract to fulfill.
I am Tetsu.
Yeah. I understand you.
Oh my God.
Actual audio.
Yoko Ono record.
Actually, that's
not
bad.
We have a preview copy of that.
It's not bad. B+. So anyway, the four of them go into the studio. And
what's that?
I don't know what that was.
Tell your little Sal's a wreck.
She is really
she's
offending
us on.
People.
She's trying to take us to places we should not have
gone. Starting to crack. Yeah. Okay. So Paul Kossoff was okay at first, but then began passing out between takes and playbacks of takes that he had just done. But surprisingly, this record holds together pretty well like any other Free album. And it sounds surprisingly like Free, except there's no great singer. The singing is done by either Simon Kirk or Rabbit. So, but the vibe is there. It sounds cool. These guys are pro players. I mean, it's a pretty solid record. And if you're a fan of Paul Kossoff, which I am, he holds it together and he plays really well on the record.
You know, there's a great song on here. I should have turned left at Albuquerque.
Yes, track 4 on side 2, now batting Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Great song.
But side 2, track 3, What's Up, Doc?
Of course, yeah. I like, side 1, track 1 is Shut Up, Shutting Up. So the good right. news for this whole process.
Huss and Pepper, I think, is the standout track on this one.
I can't believe we culled 4 of those. So the good news for this project is that Paul Rodgers and Andy Frazier reconciled and kissed and made up. And I think the story is that they reformed Free to help out Paul Kossoff, who was really falling apart. You know, his band. I mean, Free was everything to him. And you wouldn't know it by him completely inebriating himself day after day. But it really, they thought, we should get it together for Paul and let's see if we can get it going. And they would record 2 more albums as Free. There's an album called Free at Last, and then they did Heartbreaker. And the second, Heartbreaker, was assisted by Rabbit and Tetsu. They came in to do the record. And also,
I got bit by a rabbit. I had Tetsu shots for about a week after that.
On guitar, filling in when Kossoff was passed out, was Snuffy Walden.
No, he was
from
Texas.
Really?
Yes.
So I got a thing. Like, we were trying to, like, dude, I think. So how does Snuffy Walden from Houston, Texas, get into Free? Guess where Rabbit's from?
Houston, Texas.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Montana from England.
Birmingham.
Yeah. So Rabbit, you know, like Snuffy, is from Texas, and Rabbit toured with Free after they regrouped on that first album, Free at Last. And Kossoff was in no condition to tour. And so they'd get these other guys or just go on as a 3-piece, specifically in Japan. They played opening for some band and they were a 3-piece Paul Rodgers played guitar. I guess it'd be a 4-piece because Rabbit was on the piano. You played Okay, so nobody was working out, and Rabbit tells a story. This is the guy with the diary I said at the top of the show.
Rabbit tells a story. Listen.
Yeah.
Here's how it went.
So he tells a story of, like, he is so pissed at the one of the guys they hired who demanded more money as they're standing in the wings. Ladies and gentlemen, free. I'm going to need more money or I'm not going on. And Rabbit was fucking pissed, and he trashed his entire hotel room. And he had his own room, and he's like, nobody would come into the room, and I'm just smashing everything in sight. And then finally, when the smashing stopped, there was like a knock on the door, and it was the guy from Island Records, like, do you feel better, mate? Yeah, I guess I feel better now. Right. Well, you're going to pay for everything. Okay.
He's fine with that.
Yeah, he's fine with it.
Sometimes it's okay. I get that. I've paid for things.
So this guy's story is crazy, Rabbit. It's rascally. Let's just say it's rascally.
I believe you mean wascally.
Wascally.
Yeah, that's with a wa.
He's from Texas. He's got to be, I mean, we're Anglophiles. This guy must be in that same camp because he seems like all he wanted to do was go to England because he's a big fan of British rock. So he goes over there and he hooks up with a guy, Johnny I Can See Clearly Now, Nash, who's on Island Records. And so it's Rabbit who's playing Piani on that track. Of course, a hugely successful song. And he becomes sort of a staff studio musician, just like Tetsuo Yamauchi. So now post Free, I mean, he hooks up with Free because Free was on Island Records as well. And so obviously they're called to do this record. And you okay? So after Free, guess who he gets a job with?
I don't know.
The Who.
What?
The Who.
Doing what?
He's playing keyboards.
Who?
Yes, The Who. And that's what he's most known for. So if you search John Bundrick, John Rabbit Bundrick, he's the dude that's played with The Who for 30 years as a sideman keyboard player.
I'm going to officially say this right now. Good for The Who for not using cassette tapes and CDs and other digital things to enhance. They had a motherfucker behind the curtain. Whether they brought him on stage or maybe they didn't, I don't know. I don't care.
Right.
There was four Who's.
Right.
There was, right, you know, Pete and, you know, Boris and Looney and
Roger.
Roger. Rob Bobby Planet, whatever his guy's name
Boris
was.
Boris's fighter.
Yeah. So, and the fact that they actually used a real keyboard player, good for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, and he stayed with them forever. He joins the band. Keith Moon dies in 1978. And that's when they started going, well, if we're already going to have Kenny Jones playing drums, let's go ahead and grab our buddy Rabbit. Because they liked him. I think they were drinking buddies. Pretty sure Rabbit's a big drinker from the stories that I heard in the diary.
I like that.
So first gig Rabbit plays with
I'm so endeared to him suddenly.
I know. First gig I'm Rabbit. The first gig Rabbit plays with The Who. What happens at the end of a Who concert?
Everything gets smashed.
Right. So Rabbit's playing.
Oh, his gear. Oh,
so Rabbit's playing a B3. He's got a big ass B3 organ that he's got with The Who. Oh, and he's like, he goes, I'm tipping it back. I'm tipping this fucker back. And Townsend's fucking wrecking his guitar. And I'm going to dump this keyboard and jump on it. And then Townsend comes running over to me and does like a Three Stooges with two fingers and pokes him in the eye. And then the keyboard falls back on me and doesn't fall over. And Townsend's looking at him and he goes, what the fuck are you doing, mate? He's like, I'm smashing the organ. Well, it's my bloody organ. You're not smashing nothing.
But you guys are.
You get to smash
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, but you. I thought I was supposed to.
Okay.
Bonk. I poke. Bonk.
I like the Three Stooges. Yeah. Fucking.
Bonk.
So. Exactly.
Sal is on that shit.
Well, he's supposed to play on The Who's next album, Rabbit is, just as a sideman. That's before he joined the band.
Rascally
so
Rabbit.
He doesn't get a chance to play on that record. You know why? Because he pulls up in the taxi to the studio. Here he is. He's ready. Rabbit is in the taxi, pulls up at the studio, and might be a little hammered. It's allegedly hammered, but he opens the door, trips, falls, breaks his arm.
Oh, geez. Oh.
Literally at the studio for Who's Next. This guy, I need to meet this guy. A big Texan. He looks like a rabbit.
I'd like to shake his good hand.
Right.
His rabbit's foot.
But right. he played on like was it Face Dances? You Better, You Better, You Bet. He's on that record. He's
sorry about
he
that.
Toured yeah. He's not in the good who he's in the later Who.
Yeah.
But recently they had a big falling out. Like 2011 or something, Roger Daltrey had enough of his hijinks. Apparently a big partier, and Pete Townsend's like, I'm trying to be sober, and Rabbit's still partying. So he told some story in his diary where he's like, oh, I could go on all night. His diary is online, but he says that he was in New York. It's first time in New York, which funnily enough is like when he was on tour with Free. He's like, I finally made it to New York, you know? So I want to check out.
Guys, I finally made it to New York City!
Lady, shut the fuck up!
So what do you do when you're in New York? Well, I went and bought me two well, he's Texas. I went and got two cases of beer, and I sat next to one of them trash cans they got on fire. And I drank those cases of beer all night long and just watched the people go by. And then some guy comes to sell me some dope. And I thought, all right, well, let's go get some dope. And then he ends up getting rolled. And he has to go to
a did. Because not everyone who's always been at that trash can full of fire hasn't been there for months and know every inch of the place and knows when there's a guy from out of town who's going to definitely be rolled if we do this right.
Well, I love it. I think he's a new Shabby Road favorite, Rabbit.
That,
from
that is an amazing story.
John Rabbit Bundrick.
I'm going to look at this guy again.
Yeah, look him up.
Good photo.
He looks cool. He looks very much like...
I'm telling you, he looks like a young Buffin, doesn't he?
He looks totally like a young Buffin. So we're going to hear side one, track one, Bluegrass. This is Kossoff, Kirk, Tetsu, Rabbit. Self-titled album. Island 1972. Let's drop the needle on it. Check it out.
Singing bluegrass while his woman she sings her blues. He doesn't hear them. He only thinks of giving into his own seasoning. But he shows tenderness. Thank you.
There they are, Kossoff, Kirk, Tetsu, and Rabbit from their self-titled album in 1972, sounding an awful lot like Free.
Really cool. Really cool.
Tetsu did a good Andy Frazier in that track. I mean, it has that same vibe.
Yeah, actually, it's a great kind of ethereal thing at the end, just kind of grooving on
the
it.
The whole record's kind of melancholy and mellow like that. It's nice. You know, it's a cool little kind of backgroundy, chilling kind of record. Sink into the couch, I believe Steve Seaborg would say. What you got, AD?
So what I've got here is an almost unheard of powerhouse from Brooklyn, New York. Again, sticking with the New York thing. Louis Dombra, or Louis Dombra, if you will, on guitar. Gary Justin on bass. John Garner on drums and lead vocals. Now, we got a three-piece band from Brooklyn where you got a lead singing drummer.
Okay.
Kind of cool. It's interesting because you could do that back in December of 1970. And
only the aforementioned Night Ranger could pull that off.
Them.
Did they?
Or Sir Lord Baltimore.
Sir Lord Baltimore is back.
You bet your bippy it is.
Oh.
Now, this was only played once so far on the Shabby Road Record Show, and actually played from this album. Last time was episode number 49, The Island of Misfit Bands. Of course, I discovered this band through my old friend, one of my oldest friends. I met him in first grade. Of course, I speak of Matt Teets.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, listening to records growing up together from first grade on, still are friends right now to this day. Of course, famous for the Mott Collection, which...
Yeah, I think it's been so long since the Mott Collection showed up at Shabby Road, we should reset. Like, Matt Teets, Mott...
Yeah.
...sent his record collection to you.
Yeah,
AD.
You know, I met him. I went to this new school, you know, when I was a kid. I was first grade. And I didn't know anybody, and I was kind of, it was recess, and I was a new kid. First day of school for me, and I didn't know what the fuck, you know. So I kind of sat away from all the other kids, and this dude kind of, really kind of like, hey, man, kind of like, hey, kind of walked up.
You had a soundtrack?
I kind of had this cool bop to his step, sits down, he goes, I'm Matt, you know. It's kind of like, hey, you know, and right away, it's like, dude, we're going to be friends, you know. It was one of those things, we have been, and you met Mott, right?
He's a great guy.
Dude, are you kidding, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, the best of the best. So, but we, you know, we grew up from first grade getting into music together. We went to the same elementary schools and found ourselves, you know, older. And
as you get older, you get into rock and roll. And
so we'd always go, hey, I found this new band, check it out. So, you know, I was getting into blood rock, and he'd go, well, I got this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I got Alice Cooper. Well, I got, you know, and it was cool as fuck.
Awesome.
And he goes, I have Sir Lord Baltimore. It was like, oh, dude, look at the, come on, you know this album cover.
I do, it's on my list.
Great gatefold, open that up. Open it up and look at the whole fucking thing from the back.
Oh, it's just.
No, the other side, the actual outside, look at that. Flip it over, open it up.
Oh, open it's a gate to look at the entire cover.
Oh, are you kidding?
So epic.
That's an album
It looks
cover.
Like the Pirates of the Caribbean movie that I just watched.
Oh, was Sir Paul McCartney in that?
He was.
And how was he as a thespian?
He was great. It's just a dumb...
Was he a kind pirate? Or I can't see him being gnarly and girl.
I don't want to spoiler alert too much. Well, I guess by the time this episode airs, it'll be a few weeks out. But he was hilarious.
Yeah.
He plays Jack Sparrow's cousin, and they run into each other. And Sir Paul is in jail. So he's like, make sure they're all being executed.
Of course.
It's like, make sure you ask for Vincent. He's got the softest hands. You know, just goofy jokes like that. They have about a 5-minute scene.
And we're talking pirates because this is the album, describe the album cover. It's
well,
a ship, an old ghost ship.
A ghost ship,
floating in the sea of whatever the fuck.
Yeah, some sort of swirly, briny deep there.
Now, this is their first album. It's actually just. In America, it was called Sir Lord Baltimore, but the original album was called Kingdom Come. Ironically enough, their second album was called Sir Lord Baltimore.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah, that's kind of confusing to me because I always knew their first album was called Kingdom Come, but this is not...
That is Kingdom Come.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But if you look at that...
It doesn't say Kingdom Come
anymore. Underneath the Sir Lord Baltimore on the original album, it would say Kingdom Come under that.
Oh, okay.
But for some reason, that was removed.
Odd that they added In Your Face at the end of it.
Actually, ironically enough, ask me what the name of the Dirty Looks album I did was.
In Your Face?
Oh, poof. Ding, 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 ding.
A poof.
When I went a chicken dinner.
How do you spell a poof?
Hey,
I don't know. Go ahead.
I don't even know.
Go ahead.
but this thing, this is, listen, anyway, so Mott pulls this out. He goes, you got to come over. I got this great record. So I go over to his house. And of course, I had already started smoking weed by then.
In first grade?
No. this came out in 70. So I was 11.
Oh, okay.
So this shit to a stone.
What grade is that? That's fifth grade.
Whatever. To a stoned 11-year-old in early 71, this was like mind-numbing. This look at the album. I mean, again, look, it was like, holy shit. So it's heavy as hell. It's garagey. It's proggy. It's stripped down and it's raw, and I love it. I mean, this was
great
different,
record.
Like hearing, again, Blood Rock or Black Juju by Alice Cooper for the first time. And, I mean, it's a must-have sort of that. I think the new heavy metal came from that, but I think it's also the last of the garagey psychedelic, because there's still some of that psychedelic '60s.
It lingers
in
on.
There, right? Am I wrong about that?
No, that's perfect. Yeah,
you have this record. You have this record, don't you? I think
not the vinyl, but I have it kind of MP3'd.
But
out.
You know what I'm saying?
It's hard to find. You don't find this. You never find
you
this
oughta.
Fucking record.
You ought to.
Well, you can crate dig all you want, but you're not going to find it. Unless you go to Vegas for that guy. You can't afford it.
Yeah. Sir Lord Baltimore, right? It's produced by one Eddie Kramer.
Ah, New Yorker.
Yep. Jim Kritikos, Kim Kang, and one Mike Apple.
Oh.
Mike Apple, who you know from?
I know him as Mike Appel.
Was that how you...
No, I don't know who you're talking about.
I had that brief moment. Is that how you pronounce it? Tony Dorsett. That's Dorsett. Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, go on.
Well, he's a producer, a young producer from Queens. And Kings as well. Apparently they're offspring of sorts.
This has turned into the fucking Carson show.
Right? We're so off the air. Cheap jokes that Tim Conway's about to wander in here slowly. Mrs. Wiggins. But he went on after producing Sir Lord Baltimore, which is one of his earliest producing credits, to audition, not for, but to audition a young Bruce Springsteen. Because Bruce Springsteen needed a producer, so he goes, and this guy, Mike Appel. Said, it rhymes with lapel. So Springsteen, he made him come in, and he goes, well, what songs do you have? Well, you know, why should I produce you? Right?
Right.
All cocky after producing this record.
And so this gave him the balls.
No.
The bravado.
Springsteen came in and goes, and Mike Appel goes, come back when you got some songs. Right? That was in 71. So, right? So then, Not My Boss, Springsteen, comes back when he, quote, has more songs one year later. And then Appel signed him to a production contract and got the boss and company, his audition with CBS, which, of course...
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right.
Mike Appel.
Yeah.
That is Mike Appel.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, and you know, the thing is,
anyway,
the rest is, as they say, is history. It's a long, drawn out story about my hardworking father. And, you know, it's a long history after that. So thank you, Mike. Thank you. Appel, Appel. Yeah. Thank you. Right. So anyway, it's pretty cool. So this guy went on to produce like Asbury Park. And what his next one was, what, the fucking Wicked
Greetings.
Wild or...
Wild and... yeah, Wild
next
and Willing
one,
and
the other
and
one. And then he
Hardworking.
Yeah. Hardworking. And then he did, I think, Born to Run. I think I'm going to play Helium Head from this record. It's just a great one.
I'm on board.
I'm so hammered. I'm giggly tonight. It's been a weird night. There was a weirdness in here.
Well, in your defense, you did like a two-hour interview on NPR right before I got here.
Yeah, so I know. I good didn't and lubed get, by I the didn't time even I get a break, you. And I was drinking beer when I was doing that. It was live, dude. I thought we were going to record it. He goes, all right, live. We're on the air. And I'm going, ah, fuck. You know, I got a dube and I get
oh, don't say that.
A beer.
No. We'll never be on NPR cut that out, with that attitude.
I'll be their darling. Are you kidding?
Helium Head, parenthetically, I got a love. Helium Head, parenthetically, I got a love.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Put that on. That's what I want to hear.
Okay. Oh, yes, sir. He's, sir, yes, sir. We'll be right back. That band is insane.
Fuck yeah.
They're so good.
The mighty, mighty, mighty Sir Lord Baltimore. Their very first album, if you find it in America, it will be called Sir Lord Baltimore, which their second album is called Sir Lord Baltimore. But this album is actually called Kingdom Come, mm-hmm. but you won't find it on the album cover. But look for the one with the old ghost ship.
That's right.
On the cover. But that's, oh my God, what a great, great, great band. Heavy as fuck. Out with the old and in with the new, and they bridged that gap so perfectly.
No kidding.
Helium Head, I gotta love.
No kidding. Oh, wow, what a great night of freaking 70s rock and roll tonight.
Yeah, it was mostly 70s. All 70s, yeah. Was it not?
Very nice, very nice. We thank you guys very much for tuning in. Number 135 is now cruising to an abrupt halt right now as our mystery boxes are officially empty. But let's thank Liz Morgan for hanging out and running the controls tonight, manning the controls.
Yay, thank you.
Womaning.
Womaning.
Call me Kitty Cat.
Ooh. And that voice belongs to her sidekick, Sally 5000.
I don't like you.
Ooh. Oh, come on now.
Miss Fancy Pants.
I think we
Miss High and Mighty, huh?
We said she was off the rails earlier, and now she's all upset.
Once, most of the time, we're talking about how fucking hot she is. But
we need to get back in her good graces.
Whatever.
And we thank you guys for tuning in and doing all the things you do on Facebook and on Twitter, you know, sharing stuff around. You're the best advertising we got, so it means a lot to us if you can pass it around. And, you know, leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. Also, if you drop by the old website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, mm-hmm. a great way to support the show is to click on that Amazon banner. You guys know the drill by now. If you've heard podcasts before, a lot of us do that, where you just kind of click on that link, you bookmark it, and Amazon gives us a referral kickback. Pennies on the dollar. It doesn't cost you anything. It costs Amazon
stuff.
Not
a plug nickel.
Stick it to the corporate man.
Fuck the man.
Yeah, one of your films. So, so yeah, we appreciate.
That was, of course, I played the man in that film.
All of that keeps the turntable spinning here at Shabby Road week after loving week here. So, well, I believe that our music has angered the Greek gods this evening because I can see in the distance that they have released the Kraken. But lucky for you, not only do I have swarthy, Harry Hamlin-esque good looks, but I also have Trapeze Medusa in my box. So before I unsheath it to turn that Kraken into stone, I'll say goodnight to my beloved Bubo.
You should never have gone to Comic-Con, dude.
A.D. Adams.
As is so, my friend, and it looks as though the beer troughs are empty. The chunks of hurl have been push-broomed underneath the Astrovan bench seats, I believe I may have crapped myself. So, like a reluctant penis in the back room of a Mexican strip joint, I'm out, but not before saying goodnight to my unwashed and slightly dazed pal and co-host, Mr. Ryan McKay.
Wow, so many references in one.
I'm exhausted, and I'm spent.
There was a Bowie reference in there.
Oh, my God.
Pushing the hurl under the face.
I got nothing left.
Oh,
really? I give my all for this project.
My beloved Bubo. Do you remember Bubo?
I don't even know what Bubo is. I don't even know what that is.
Clash of the Titans from like 1980.
Oh, I remember that. I remember this one.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. Nameonanything.com.